This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
It's a WIP afternoon show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz. Unfortunately, the Philly season is over earlier than we had hoped. But fortunately, we have one more call from Larry Anderson to help figure out what went wrong. LA, we're hoping you have all of the answers during this call.
Wait, it's over?
Yeah. Unbelievable, right?
It hasn't sunk in yet, but I mean, it has, but it hasn't. It's just disappointing, you know, frustrating, I guess. When you look at where the team were, how they came out of the gates, you know, after the first homestand, but after that, I mean, they were unbeatable. It looked like there was no team that could beat them, but that kind of ended abruptly, I guess, starting around the All-Star break.
Well, let me ask you this, and it's a very open-ended question, but if I were to ask you just what went wrong, like why did it happen? What is your gut answer on that?
Can I use it? Just do one word.
Sure.
Everything.
Yeah, that's a fair answer. Yeah.
The pitching wasn't what it was. Rangers getting hurt, I think, and just kind of the bad back issue and losing whatever mojo he had going, and just the offense. I mean the. They said it last year after said we need to stop chasing so much. And I think somebody reported after the Dodgers beat the Mets in that first game that they chased six pitches out of the zone in the first couple innings against Senga, whereas we chased like 18 pitches out of the zone. I mean, I don't think that's anything that's eye popping news. That somehow we have to figure out that we're just not selective. I mean, I don't know. When you're this team, to me, I guess, is built to hit home runs. And if you don't hit home runs, you have either have huge peaks and huge valleys. Because when you're hitting home runs, everything's going right. And when you're not, nothing's going right. And the offense can overcome any pitching. The bullpen was great all year until the last month. And I don't think it's fatigue. I mean, Bob Thompson was very careful. Like these guys, how many guys pitched more than one inning in an outing? I mean, I don't know how many times. There are very few. So, you know, pitching one inning every other day, he didn't like these guys back-to-back days. I don't see any fault there. I don't put any credence in the fact that we had the gap after the clinching the division and then missing the first round because we weren't playing good. We were 5-8 going into that playoff series or into that stretch of days off. So I don't buy into any of that. It's just, to me, it just comes down to the when they needed it most, the players that they needed and had counted on all year failed. Just plain and simple. It was just an all-around failure. And that's there was no other way to say it. Offensively, only a couple guys did much with the bat. And the relief corps, I mean, I'm looking at these guys in the playoffs, and I'm going through and looking at the guys in these rosters and these bullpens, and like, three out of four guys that I look at, they haven't given up a run yet. We didn't have one reliever not give up a run. Mm-hmm. Not one. I mean, that's baffling to me. And again, I don't think anybody was overworked. I think it was just an all-around failure by the whole ball club. And there's nothing to point to me to point your finger at. Like, well, if this would have happened, or if they would have done this, or they'd have done that. It's like, no, it was everybody. It was a collective effort to lose early.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think if there are things you want to point at during the season, I think you can focus on times where the lineup sort of went hot and cold with different players. But to your point, the starters in the bullpen was pretty much excellent all season, so that wouldn't really explain what happened in the postseason. I look at the postseason, and I'd say it was a complete team effort in the postseason. I think all facets sort of contributed. So with that being said, L.A., coming off the press conference the other day, listening to both Dave Dombrowski and Topper, I know it's still early, and they're not going to show their hand as to, at least Dombrowski isn't, as far as what they may do, as far as changing the roster. But it sounds like a lot of the same players are coming back. Pretty much everyone is under contract coming back next year. So how are we supposed to get a different result if we come back with pretty much the same team next year?
They have to stick to their philosophy or their guns about not going out of the zone, just stressing that. But I don't know that how that can change anything. Is a guy capable of doing that? Not chasing pitches out of the zone when they've done it for a couple of years now. That's the million-dollar question. It's like, what do you do? I mean, I don't know how much you change. I don't think you can bring in a ton of free agents or right. even one big free agent like a Soto. I mean, you got, $900 million, almost $1 billion wrapped up in this offense, or a lot of it. And so, I mean, what can you do? I mean, they've got to put the bat on the ball. I think I don't know why, but if we fundamentally, I mean, I don't think baseball fundamentally is near what it was 30 years ago. I just don't. You don't see guys hitting behind runners. You don't see guys taking pitches when they're down late in the game. You don't see guys taking pitches after a couple guys have been walked. You don't see guys trying to hit behind a runner, man on first, man on second, nobody out. You don't see guys trying to hit the ball to the right side. I don't know when baseball decided that those things aren't important, but they were important for 100 and how many years. But now all of a sudden, and I do, I followed some of it with analytics, that analytics dictate so much of what's going on in this game. And then you look in the playoffs and you look at teams bunting. You see teams sacrifice, the suicide squeezes. You see guys moving runners over. Like, why can't we stress that anymore? Why isn't that stressed at all? I mean, everything is just, it's analytics. And you look at some of the, you know, the coaches in the big leagues anymore. Some of them never played. How do you talk to players in the big leagues about playing in the big leagues when you never played in the big leagues? Stuff like that. It's baffling to me because some of these guys are very good with analytics, but they've never spent any time on the field in the big leagues. And the experience that you get in the big leagues, just being around other big league players. I mean, I look at, from my own self experience, being around Steve Carlton, being around Nolan Ryan, being around Gaylord Perry. It's not that I want to be them, but I can certainly learn a lot from them, and I did. And I just think when you don't have that, you lose something. You're missing something. But I don't know. I mean, how does Johan Rojas get here and not know how to bunt?
And then get sent down to the minors to figure it out, and then
still not know how to bunt.
Yeah, L.A., so we were listening to the pressers yesterday, and I think the most confusing or maybe frustrating moment is both Dave Dombrowski and Rob Thompson talked about using the entire field as hitters. You know, right. that we fell in love with pulling the ball. And Thompson got asked, is this something you stressed during the year? And he said, every day. So I just keep coming back to, and I... Either Rob Thompson seems like a good manager to me, right? My perspective. But I keep coming back to, it's got to be either the players are not capable or the voice that is telling them to do this for some reason is not connecting. So, and then back to Ike's point about everybody coming back, I just don't think the plan can be, well, we got to luck out and be able to hit home runs at the exact right time, because that just seemed, I know there is some luck involved in winning in the baseball playoffs, but that feels like we're banking on luck, and that seems like the wrong strategy.
I agree. But one of the things, like, I look at, like, and Thompson might have used this in his presser about Schwarber, who he made up his mind he didn't want to strike out so much. He started hitting the ball the other way early in the year, you know, hitting singles, not, you know, not back legging everything and trying to hit it 500 feet. Not that he does that all the time, but he did. He was very conscious of trying to stay up the middle or the other way with pitches, and I think it made a difference. He was driving in runs without home runs early in the year, so it's something that can be done. I think they're big league players and they're here obviously because they've got talent. Most of them, or they wouldn't be here. There's some around baseball that are here that shouldn't be here. I would say that, but. Most of the guys that I've seen, the guys that we have, I mean, they're big league players. If they can't make an adjustment to at least attempt to hit the ball the other way or to go up the middle instead of pull. But again, it's back to the analytics. It's home runs, strikeouts, and walks. That's what makes everything. You never hear anybody talking about pitcher's command. It's all about velocity and movement.
Spin rate.
Velocity and movement. That comes from analytics. Analytics can't teach a command, I don't think, and at least it hasn't shown me that. Because you get guys throwing 97, 98, but they can't spot a ball. They can't throw a fastball where they want 5 times out of 10. Maybe 3 out of 10. That's not a real good percentage. But it's not stressed. At least I haven't seen it. When I never hear anybody talking about it, I'm not talking about just our club. I'm talking around baseball. Where's those things that used to be important that mattered? That if you spotted, well, this is like Curt Schilling said. He's like, Crucky and I think I mentioned this before, but he talked about Schill. And the one thing Crucky had said to him, like, you get behind, what are you going to do? He goes, I always got that down and away in my back pocket. I can do that. I can command that fastball down. Do we stress that? I don't know. I certainly don't see it. Not when everybody's pitching up in the zone and then you make a little mistake and it's hit out. I'm baffled that things aren't stressed enough. And if guys aren't willing to do it to me, then it becomes incumbent. And I know it's not sit well with the players, but if guys aren't doing things the way they're supposed to, the way you want them to, set them down. Don't do it once. Do it every time they do it. To not running balls out, pop-ups that don't run out. Anytime like that, when you see it, like I want to see a player go to another player when something like that happens. Why not? But are these players? Do they make too much money that they don't? Nobody cares about the other guy. Nobody wants to confront a teammate and stand up to him and go, "Hey, we don't do it. We're not doing that way. That's not the way we do it. Come on, you know better than that." Something. It doesn't have to be to embarrass him, but something's. I don't know.
It just seems to me that. And I'm not in there, that we talk about culture a lot with players and or with sports teams. And we repeat it over and over. The Phillies have a good culture. But I think you have to wonder whether just because everybody likes everybody else doesn't mean that it is the culture that is most conducive to winning. And the thing that you just said about having a player say, this is not acceptable, it just seems like everybody might be a little too comfortable with everybody else. From a player standpoint and a manager standpoint, I hate to use the word accountability, but it doesn't feel like anybody thinks about the consequences of not doing the things that you're talking about.
You mentioned to me one of the most important words, maybe not the most, but one of the most important words for a player. Is accountability. Where is that accountability at? That's missing. And it's to me that one of the most important things is being accountable to your teammates.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is if somebody's not doing something right, then another teammate should be able to go up and go, hey, what are you trying to do there? Were you thinking, hey, those two guys walked in front of you. What were you thinking about swinging at the first pitch? Or popping a ball up and say it gets dropped, or maybe you could be at second instead you're on first. Like, well, all kinds of different things. But somebody instead of the manager or a coach having to go to a player, I know Thompson is one of the best, and I think one of the reasons players love playing for him is that he doesn't embarrass him, he doesn't call him out, not publicly. I'm certain of the fact that he has words with certain players. After things happen and not in front of everybody. But it's almost time to say, hey, call somebody, call them out.
Yeah.
Let people see that you're in, not that you're in charge, because I think the players respect Thompson, but I think even more so, if you pull a guy out when he does something wrong, you're letting everybody else know, hey, if I can do it with this guy or with that guy, you know, you're next. Play the game right. And that's accountability. And that was one thing that I think with the 93 team, and I know players don't want to hear about the 93 team. It's 30-something years ago. But that team, they policed themselves. I think Jim Fregosi had one of the easiest jobs as a manager in the world, but managing that 93 team, because Dalton was a leader, but there was a lot of veteran guys on a team that didn't allow for stuff like that to happen. They would get in each other's face, and they weren't afraid of it. It wasn't to demean them or embarrass them. It was to say, you're not doing that right. This is the way we're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was on board with it. Nobody had a problem with it. I saw guys getting other guys' face in the clubhouse a number of times. And it's, you know, because you don't want to be criticized, but at the same point, let's make these guys accountable. And to see that, I don't know why they don't or why they can't, or if it's they're just too worried about themselves. I don't think so. I think players all pull for each other. But part of that, too, is making those other players accountable. Yourself, you have to be accountable, too. If you're not accountable, it's tough to go out and get on anybody else. But there's some guys on this team, I think, that go out there and bust it and do what they can. Doesn't mean they're going to have great games every game, but they got to be able to go to somebody and go, hey, you didn't run that out. Or, hey, you know, what are you doing there? You got to try and move that runner over or whatever. It's just little things, but they make a huge difference. And accountability is one of the biggest things I think that we need to get to as a team from the top to the bottom. Be accountable and go, hey, this isn't working, and this isn't the way we do it.
Well, it's going to be, you know, it'll be a long off season, of course, but I think we are entering into a new era of this core of Phillies baseball in that it was all fun and games because nobody expected anything for a couple of years. But they're learning this year based on fan reaction and I think probably internally from the owner that we're not in that era anymore. And they're really going to understand what Philadelphia is about now, because they will go into next year from the minute spring training starts. It'll just be, you know, we can get off to the greatest start in the world, but people will remember this now. And I think it'll be interesting to see how the players handle it, how the manager handles it as well.
And I think, too, to kind of jump on that, just like people weren't expecting this in 22. They're expecting it now after 22 and last year going into the playoffs. They expect this team to do better, and they should. I mean, we're one of the top five payrolls in baseball. There's a lot of money being spent out there, a lot more than some other teams that are in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And to be accountable. They've got to be accountable. And I think, you know, fans expect that. They expect this team to win. And the players should expect that of themselves. I think they do. But they have to push it even further, I think. And part of that is just making each other accountable themselves.
Well, we love having you on every week.
Mm.
And we're going to come back in the spring, all smiles. So
we're only going to talk each week after wins, right?
Yeah. Wow. Look, man.
As long as the team cooperates.
You make a couple of phone calls. Make sure that happens. I think we'd be fine with that, too. Well, thank you for everything this year. We love having you on. Mm-hmm. And
that was definitely.
It ended the wrong way, but, you know, it's about the journey, L.A. It's about the journey.
The journey's not over.
Yes, yes, sir. All right, L.A.
All right, brother. See you in March.
All right, see you, man.
Yep.
Love that L.A. is an accountability guy.
Yeah.
That's why he's on this show.
Yes.
All our guests are all about accountability.
Yes.
We were all with L.A. when the game ended last week.
Yes.
When the season ended. So yeah. Seeing Fransky first come out.
Yep.
You know, and Fransky, he's like, hey, I don't know. What do you want me to tell you?
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you want me to tell you?
None of them made me feel better.
Yeah,
sure.
Exactly.
The only guy that was feeling good was Mr. Parlay over here.
Oh, come on, man.
Yep.
I forgot about that.
Mr. Lindor, Ikey Lindor over there.
I feel ashamed about that one, man.
Didn't feel ashamed when that money hit your account, did you?
No, I didn't. Oh, man, I forgot about that.
All right. Back to Sirianni.
Yes.
Ken Nick Sirianni.
The other team everyone's mad at.
Yeah. Ken Nick Sirianni, when you back, 215-592-9494. Coming up next, you asked for it. We hear it all the time. You guys ignore the Flyers.
Oh.
You ignore the Flyers.
We talk Flyers, like, you guys are idiots.
Yes. All we were doing was waiting for the Meechkoff arrival.
Meech.
We're a big Meechkoff show. So we're going to debut a new segment coming up next. Flyers only. Flyers in 50 with Broads. We'll see if he can do it.
And that's not 50 minutes.
No.
Oh, it's not?
Nope.
Well, some people could have thought that's what was going on.
Yeah, come on. Meechkoff.
He didn't score 8 goals.
Yeah,
last
hadn't
night.
Won anything yet. So have that, and also Chris Long had something to say about Nick Sirianni.
C. Long,
former Eagle and champion Chris Long. So we'll have that for you next. This is the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Wow!
Not the remix, too.
Where's Elliot and his Spotify finding this one?
Who did he think the kid was?
Yeah. It's a WIP.
Bow Wow?
It's a WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz. Now, you know us as a lot of things, right? You know us as football guy Ike. There's Jackie Baseball over there. There's goof around and fart jokes, you know, that we love the Costco guys or whatever. But what you don't know is that we are the primary Flyer show on the station as well.
Love it.
And now that Meechkoff is here, we're going to ramp.
Big Meech.
Meech. We're going to ramp that up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And part of it is this dedicated Flyer segment that we're going to do with our very own Hunter Brody. Broads, you there?
I am here. Now, I have a few things to get off my chest before we start. I don't know how this works.
All right. Well, I was going to explain how it works. Do you want to go first?
Already too much talking.
Yeah, already things to get. This will eat into your time. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, first off, happy birthday, Ike.
Appreciate that, Broads.
Of course. Now, I was going to say, you know, I was going to spend 20% of my time, actually, to say that this time limit is extremely offensive to the hockey community.
Oh, God.
Classic Flyers.
Yeah, this is so Flyers. Give you an inch. It's like, Jack was right. It's like, talk about the Flyers, and then you talk about them, and they're like, you're doing it wrong. It's like...
Well, 50 seconds, I mean...
Well, can get a lot done in 50 seconds.
Yeah,
that's true. Hey, listen, that is very true.
Yeah, you know, Jack has a second kid coming along.
That didn't take him long.
Not at all.
All right. Okay, Broads, here's how Flyers in 50 is going to work.
Oh, man.
And then if you have anything extra to get off your chest, you can get off it afterwards.
Okay.
All right, so here's how it works. We start with 50 seconds, but based on how the Flyers are playing, you can earn more time or lose time. So for every win, you will get 2 more seconds. But for every loss, overtime or otherwise, because I'm not buying this whole...
Hold on a second. The all-important 2 points is a big deal. You can't disrespect the standings.
Disrespect getting a point.
Yeah. The overtime loss is nonsense. It's got to go. No point for that. So you will get detracted 2 points for a regulation loss and 1 second for an overtime loss. That's how it's going to work. So we're going to start with 50.
Good joke.
All right. Are you prepared for the first edition of Flyers in 50, Broads? Are you prepared?
Come on now.
Hit the music, Jack.
Flyers in 50.
All right, let's start here. Matvei Meechkoff scores a greasy one last night, mucking and grinding in the blue paint. So it's not just all pretty. It's not just all skill, one-timer as he drags down towards the goal line to find Twine. No. All right, he's able to get into the dirty areas like good old Wayne Simmonds. But I don't want this all just to be about Matvei Michkov, okay? Because there's another young star in town, and his name's Jet Luchenko.
I don't care.
He deserves some recognition as well. Are you kidding me? This kid is 18 years old, and he's getting matched up against Connor McDavid last night and holding his own. Guys that are 10 years in the league that are 29 can't even figure out how to stay stride for stride with McDavid. Yet this guy's able to do it.
Oh, there we go. That's 50.
All right. What'd you guys think? I mean, I have so much more on the table. It's unbelievable.
Oh, my God. Broads, I feel your pain, man, because I'm into it. I was into it. I wanted to hear more, and these guys are ringing buzzers and everything, man. Well, just sounded the horn.
Look,
what's going on here?
Here's the issue, Broads. You came in, and you're like, I'm not going to talk all about Michkov. Talk all about Michkov! What are we doing here?
Well, no, because Jet Luchenko deserves some praise. You guys are a big Jet Luchenko fan?
Look, I like that name for sure. Yeah. Jet Luchenko, that's a name.
Yeah, born in 04, when Ike was in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I mean, Spike, how would you feel if I demanded Sixers in 30 after a game against Charlotte, and that's all you get to talk about your little lifeless Sixers?
Whoa. Oh, I like where Flyers and Fifth. This is classic Flyers Sixers.
Okay. All right. Well, this is where everyone with the Flyers is. Everyone beats their chest. What, you guys made the playoffs twice in the last decade? What
By the way, they're 1-2. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I mean, let's slow down over there. You're going to act tough about this Sixers regime?
No, I'm just trying to keep you in line here. Maybe Gio is right about you.
Ah, oh, God. Oh, here we go.
Ooh, boy.
Spike always knows which card to pull.
Yeah.
Jet Luchenko, I like it. Yeah, Michkov like and Jet Luchenko.
I like that
And
name.
Luchenko is a Russian guy?
No. This is he was 17 at the time of the draft. He just turned 18 in August. He was nobody knew what the hell.
No, where's he from? Where's he from?
Is he Russian or is he not Russian?
No, he's an American kid.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't sound like it, but I'm just checking.
I like the name Jet, though.
Yeah, we're big Russian
it's
guys
like
here.
Jet Li.
Yeah. Yeah, Jet's a good name.
Can you stop saying we're big Russian guys here?
Oh, never mind. He's Canadian.
This is a hockey guy.
Yeah, listen. I had to double check. I thought I had it. What do you know?
All right, bro.
Listen, I enjoyed the segment, bros. We got to get you more. We got to get you more seconds, though, bro. We got to get you more.
Well, that's
all we got to do is win some games. That's all. We'll be good, Ike. We'll
yeah.
Be good.
All right. All right, bros.
I enjoyed it, brother. Thank you.
Fellas. Have a good one.
There he is.
That was awesome.
There he is, bros. We love bros.
Bros is a little feisty.
Yes.
Listen, this when Flyers fans get fired up, you get a little chesty.
Yeah.
Yes.
They want to fight.
Yeah. That's what I love about. That's what I love about the segment is that there is pride.
Yes.
Coming out of him in that segment.
Well, he better have a little more pride timing out his script there. Guys, it's like, I don't want to just talk about Michkov. Man, the team hasn't been relevant in 10 years.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
have the first great player, and he's like, I don't want to talk about him. Get out of here!
Headlines. We work in headlines.
Michkov.
Yeah. Not yet.
Right. Well, throw in a little Luchenko.
A little. Sure. Maybe if he gets more seconds,
yes.
We can do that. The Twitter question today is brought to you by Mark's Jewelers.
Oh, man.
Our football team is chasing a championship ring. Make her feel like a world champion every day with a ring from Mark's. Online at marks-jewelers.com. Can Nick Sirianni win you back over? 56% say no, I'm out. 44% say yes, he can. 215-592-9494.
That's going
the
wrong
other
way.
Yes. Dave, say what, guy? You're on WIP.
What's up, fellas? Hey, look, that little guy you talking about, Michkov, whatever you call, hey, he going to be good, man.
He is good.
Yeah, we didn't know his name.
He's definitely going to be. Hey, but listen, I'm going to say something about the Eagles, but please can I share something with y'all at that talk about that?
Yeah.
So far, I haven't seen nothing that the Eagles doing that's going to make me believe that they're going to have a good season. Like, you know I'm a diehard Eagles fan because I even made songs about them.
Yeah.
You know? And two times already, I played golf. At the Saints game, I thought the Saints was going to blow them out, but somehow they won that.
Mm-hmm.
And they won. And then the other game was Tampa, which I thought they might have a chance, but I went and played golf again.
Mm, so did they.
I don't see nothing. I don't see nothing that's going to tell me that they're going to be good this year. Nothing.
So from a Sirianni perspective, are you completely out on Nick, or is there something that they could do outside of winning a Super Bowl, of course? Is there something they could do, something he could do to get you back in on him?
Right now, nothing.
Okay.
Nothing. I don't see nothing. 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 Mm. But I do want to share this with you guys. I was talking to Ava about this morning.
Yeah.
Have you ever played, you guys ever played Little League football, like midget football? You played that, right?
No, I did not.
Oh, you didn't?
I did. No, I did.
No, I did.
I did. Yeah.
I got to tell you something. There's a team. My grandson plays on it. It's Gloucester Township. They call it the Stallions. They playing in Washington Township this Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Ike, I'm going to tell you, your eyes will pop out of your socket. These guys are, I'm going to even go five, six, seven, and barely seven. You should see these guys. They throw the ball. They throw it for touchdowns. They do double reverses. Hey, look, they look like little pros. You should see them, and you feel sorry because the team is evenly spread out. Ike, these guys are so real. I've never seen nothing like this in all my life. I wish you guys could come down and see them, man.
Yeah.
I wish you could come see them, man. It's unbelievable.
Maybe one day.
Yeah.
But
6 years old, you said?
Yeah, I don't watch a lot of 6-year-old football.
I'll get my son-in-law to send you guys some video clips.
Okay. I would love to see it.
You're not going to believe it, Spike. I'm serious, man. I've never seen nothing like this. I'm 65 years old. I ain't never seen nothing like this.
All right.
At that age, man. You're saying.
Yeah.
At that age.
Yeah, at that age.
Yes.
Yeah, at that
yes.
age.
Yeah, because they're mostly just running and, you know, in packs or whatever. It's like,
yes. Throwing the ball. They throwing it.
Yeah.
How far down the field are they throwing it?
Jack
wants to see.
Yeah, noodle arm 6-year old.
No, look, they 2 feet tall, and they throwing the ball. Man.
I got you.
Right.
I can't believe it.
All right, brother.
Yeah, who's your man?
Do we want to go down there?
Isn't that my grandson? His name is Carl Jenkins. He's the running back. And he play. Right. That's how you probably played when you was little. Right, he did.
Wow. Coming up next, Kirstie Alley.
Yeah.
And
appreciate it, Dave.
All right, Dave.
Thank you, brother. Yeah, I did not play Little League football.
That's interesting.
No, I did not. When
did you first play football? Middle school?
High school.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yes.
Wow. You basketball guy?
Yes. Right?
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Chucker.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah.
We will get to...
Then the football coach said, son, I've watched you play this year. Probably got a better chance over here with us.
Well, the coach changed your life.
He did.
He changed your life. 215-592-9494. Get back to your calls right after Jack tells you here about appliances.
Because I'm Jackie Appliances.
You are.
For as much as people say Jackie Baseball.
Jackie Pucks.
I would say Jackie Pucks, too.
Yeah.
I might be taking over that segment from old Bronzy.
Yeah.
Keep talking about Jet Luchensky.
Yeah, he gets a little mouthy.
Yeah. A little chesty from Broads. I mean, he's speaking for a lot of Flyers fans.
Yeah.
But we all know this is a huge month of football, huge month of hockey.
No.
Obviously, we're all getting back into the boys in the barn.
The barn.
And you got to make sure that your appliances are ready to go. Your kitchen, your outdoor kitchen, even though it's chilly, I mean, you're still outside. So you need to make sure everything's ready to go. And the only place to go for your appliance needs is National Appliance Warehouse for a lot of reasons. But the main reason is you walk in there, you feel like family. I was in there a couple weeks ago. And it was like you walk in, you're hanging out. That doesn't mean they're not professional. They are that part of their whole message. What are you laughing at?
I'm laughing at you say they feel like family.
Well, it feels like family.
Do you just go make their place a pigsty like you do at your house?
That's where they come in for everything. That's what makes National Appliance Warehouse so great.
Okay.
But, you know, they feel like your family and you feel like you're hanging out, but they also can answer every question you need. Obviously, I need a lot of help, so they always help me out with that. But on top of all that, they have a thing called Price Assure. Price Assure is a piece of technology specific for National Appliance Warehouse that instantly updates price tags all throughout the store. So, tax-free Delaware, Price Assure, and also great savings events, including the Columbus Day Mega Sale going on right now. So there's over 100 brands at National Appliance Warehouse from Sub-Zero to Budget in their 15,000 square foot showroom. Go to nationalappliancewarehouse.com today or visit their showrooms in tax-free Wilmington or Middletown, Delaware. And as always, tell them Fred sent you.
So Chris Long is a champion, a former Eagle.
Two-time champion.
Two-time champion. And has a podcast and was talking about Nick Sirianni's Sunday, I guess I would say. And here's what Chris had to say.
When you become a head coach, you got to act like a head coach. Like, period, bro. I'm trying to put myself in. I said this yesterday. Put Nick Sirianni's brain in the other 31 coaches in the NFL's heads. Do a lobotomy. And imagine, name a coach in the NFL. Name a coach. Imagine any of these guys walking over to your own fan base talking shit at the end of the game because you beat the Browns. It's hard to imagine, especially when you consider that one of the most painful moments of this guy's tenure so far was walking out of that Chiefs stadium and poking the bear. What are you doing? They won the Super Bowl. You won a regular season game. So, like, I've never liked this part of it. I've never liked this energy. Act like a head coach. When the guy got a sudden haircut coming in the week, what did I say? Everybody knows this. Everybody knows my theory. My theory is when somebody gets a haircut suddenly or changes their facial hair or dyes their hair, things are not good.
Well...
spot on.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was interesting coming from a player, a former player as well.
Yeah.
You know, because we've had so many of the current players just say, hey, that's Nick.
Right.
Here's a guy with, I guess, with a different perspective.
And he's an old school.
Yeah.
He's played for coaches like Bill Belichick and Jeff Fisher and guys that are sticklers and are buttoned up for the most part. And Jack, I can remember you weren't here, Spike, but that was one of the few criticisms I had after the big win last year over Kansas City.
Yeah.
I didn't like the stuff he did going up the tunnel. You know, I didn't like that. It's like, dude, we don't need that. Like, we don't need that. You don't need that. No other coach behaves like that. And there's a fine line between trying to connect with your players and show them that you're in the fight with them and being the adult in the room and being a good example for them as well.
Well, there's a difference between showing that energy in private and showing that it's just a matter of where you're showing the energy. I'm sure they appreciate the energy.
And he actually, I think he talked about that today, about showing that he realizes that he needs to keep some of that stuff in-house versus putting it on display for everybody else to see. You can get the same impact out of your players by showing them that energy behind closed doors. But, dude, when you're out in front of everybody and you're on the sidelines as a head coach, you're in a very fortunate position to be one of 32. This isn't a high school team. It's not a college team, right? You don't get to do anything you want to up and down the sideline. It's the NFL, man.
It's the biggest sports league in the world.
Yes, and there's a reason why coaches carry themselves a certain way. It's what's expected of them. They are the face of 32 billionaire corporations. And dude, you are a representative of the Eagles. And that's why I wasn't surprised about the Jeff McClain report. Two people saying they were embarrassed.
Embarrassed, yeah.
I can imagine who those two people were.
Yeah. For sure.
First initials JL.
Yeah. 215-592-9494. Aaron in Mount Airy. Can Nick Sirianni turn you around there?
What's up, fellas, man? Listen.
What up, man?
Happy birthday, big homie.
Appreciate it, broski.
Right quick. Do you not have the post-game show anymore?
I do not.
Oh, yeah. Because I've been watching Seth. I'm like,
they're really starting to go after Ike Reese now.
Yeah, they whacked you, boy. They whacked me. Yep, I was whacking that thing.
I tap in the Seth. Right quick, Spike, you said who's a man now, right?
Yeah.
You said Elvis.
Yes.
Let me ask you.
Yes.
How old was the young lady that he married?
Uh-oh.
Ooh, boy.
Well, it's a different time. She was like 15. I mean, I look.
Let's not go down that road.
Yeah,
yes.
I'm not.
Yes.
I'm not defending that, of course, but it was like I'm not.
Yeah, it was a different time. I know.
Yeah, the different time. And
what do you about Sirianni?
I don't endorse. Yeah, I don't endorse everything Elvis did. You know, so
this is my thing about Sirianni, right?
Yeah,
and we normally don't disagree. And this is birthday, but here. Nah.
Okay.
Ike, when yes. did you turn on Chip Kelly after he traded Deshaun? After he traded LeSean, that's when he
pretty much on. Yes. Okay. Yeah, pretty much after he traded DJ.
He normally defends the coaches and the quarterbacks. Cool.
Yep.
He's Mr. Positive. There's nothing wrong with that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to go, and he didn't turn on Doug Peterson until the final season when it was just atrocious.
Yeah.
He was more critical, yep. Right? You haven't fallen off the Nick Sirianni bandwagon yet. You've been saying, how can we blame him on stuff when he's been handcuffed? Oh, check this out. Dan Campbell, Mike Tomlin, John Harbaugh. All of them are CEO-type coaches. I don't know what the fan base – and I know when – I know the fan base got mad at Dan Campbell. I've seen – I'm in Baltimore a lot. I see how they talk about John Harbaugh sometimes, and I see Pittsburgh Steelers fans get mad at him when they see that they haven't had a quarterback since then. So, but one thing they never question them is, what are you doing? Why are we questioning Nick Sirianni about what he's doing? Because he was stripped of the play calling back in 2021.
Mm-hmm.
He was stripped – so your job – is to make sure we win games. That's it. And I don't care about his overall record. What have we been since we collapsed since last year? A mediocre team. Like, so we could put the blame on the offense on Kellen Moore. Mm-hmm. We could put the blame on defense on Vic Fangio. Oh, and
or Jalen Hurts.
And Jalen Hurts. But the overall team, it falls on you. I don't care about all the criticism getting to him. I don't care about none of that. It's all about the performance of the team, and since the 49ers game, we have been one of the worst teams in the NFL.
That's it. I don't care
about 2022. Mm-hmm. Since the Niners game, we have been one of the worst teams in the NFL. So if you're not calling plays, which it seems like you have your hand in, cool. And another thing, you're talking about accountability, right? So when you go on the morning show to do the interview, they ask you, what do you say to the fans? Oh, that's between, you know how I do it. That's between me and the fans. Well, everyone, like all the people in the area heard you. I didn't even know he did it. Because Once A.J. Brown caught that pass, I turned the game off. I turn it off. I don't care about none of that extra curriculum, so I turn it off.
Mm-hmm.
And my son alerted me to what Nick Sirianni did. I don't care about it. But if you talk about accountability, what do you say to the fans? And then you hop on the stage. Then you hop on the interview. Oh, every now and then I'll call a defensive play. It was a bad play. Why do you say that, bro?
That was not a good idea. Yeah.
You talk too damn much. Cut it short. Look at how Mike Tomlin handles his press conferences. He directs straight to the point. Boom, just like that. And the people start questioning, why Nick Sirianni start talking a little less? Don't worry about it. Just get straight to answer the question and leave it at that. I tune you out, bro. They ask you a simple question, and you talk for 5 minutes about nothing. Like, stop that. Just be the head coach of the football team. Who cares if people like you? If your team like you, cool. Who cares if the fans like you? Who cares if WIP like you? Who cares if the national media likes you? Just be the coach, because we have been a mediocre to bad football team since the Niners slapped us.
I think, Aaron, what I would say, though, is mm-hmm. I agree with everything that you said. What the strange position he's in now, though, is that it almost seems as though if they do win games, he doesn't, like, that the doubt on him will still remain, it seems like. Now, maybe if he had 3 straight years of consistently winning and won a Super Bowl, all those sorts of things, it just seems like the doubt for him and the criticism for him is maybe not fully in line with what his responsibilities actually are. I agree with everything you said, but I do think there's this weird sort of glass ceiling almost on the credit he will get from fans on how they
without
play.
Without question.
You know, so that's the strange thing.
And that's okay. Doug Peterson was horrible last year. He sat out 1 year, and he's back in the NFL. If people are questioning what you, like, that's Jalen Hurts. That's Kellen Moore. They turning that team around. That's fine. But guess what? If you end your tenure with the Eagles good and you move on, you will find another job, or we win the Super Bowl. It's really no in between. We either win the Super Bowl or you move on, and if you move on pretty good, you'll find another job. Like, this, I just want a good team. Because, listen, man, what's his name? Paul George is already hurt. And Embiid is already hurt. In the Phillies, we can't get into it. Like, I just want a good football team back in this city. And I ain't got that much faith in Jalen Hurts. So I need a good football, but I need a good football team.
And Aaron is struggling right now.
Yeah. Well, hey, we
got a lot of hope.
We got to go now. I'm afraid to, now it's Bryce Harper's birthday, so the next question today is who's a guy for a pair of tickets to the Flyers home opener? You can buy them at PhiladelphiaFlyers.com. I'm gonna pick apart whoever you pick because you did it to me. So who's your guy?
Well, since Corey brought in wrestling, now I'm a big fan of wrestling.
Yep.
I'm gonna go Stone Cold Steve Austin.
No, that's a good one.
There you go.
You know, he made people alcoholics because of all the beer stuff. I was wondering if you thought of that.
I don't even know if you're that tongue-in-cheek or is that real?
No, I was just screwing around. All right, Eric. Because he used to crush the beer cans.
Yes, okay. Yeah. Nah, I was like, I don't even know if that's real.
I'm lying. He came at my Elvis thing.
He did.
You know?
And that was not fair to put that on you.
No, of course I don't endorse
that. Now, if I'd have said R. Kelly is a cool guy, everybody looked at me like, man, what the hell?
That might have been a little over the...
Should we keep going?
Yeah, no.
I got one.
No, I'm just kidding.
Well, you know who was next.
Yeah, Jack's guy is Michael Jackson. Jerry Lee Lewis. All right, can we have enough of that now?
You don't even know Jerry Lee Lewis.
You know, he doesn't.
I don't.
Yeah. All right. Joining us next to help break down why the Eagles' offense seems like it's stuck in mud is Baldy.
Baldy!
Nobody breaks down film like Brian Baldinger. He will join us next. This is the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app